From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of August 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And then later in the program, we'll hear from Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, we'll get updates of crop progress from the statisticians in the five top corn-producing states of the nation in order. They are Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana. And we'll talk with Harry Cooney of GrowMark about the agricultural energy markets. It all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media at the University of Illinois.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
On this Tuesday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished like this. The nearby September soft red winter wheat at $6.80 today. Down 13 and a quarter, December at 703 and three quarters, 13 and three quarters lower, and the March at 730 and a half, down 11 and one quarter on the afternoon. July of next year at 739. Actually, July of next year settled at 726 and three quarters, and it was down 12 and a quarter for the day. Hard red winter wheat, nearby contract, 685, down 15 and a half cents. Corn pit, 389 and a half for the September settlement price, down a penny. December at 404, down a half, and the March at 416 and a half, unchanged. May corn at 424, unchanged. July at 430 and a half, unchanged. And December of 2011, down 2 3/4 at $4.28. August soybean futures, 1053 and a half, a quarter higher. September, 1022 3/4, up 3 1/2 cents. November at 1018, 8 cents higher. January, 1024 3/4, up 8 1/2. The March at 1026 1/4, up 8 3/4 for the day. August bean meal at 308.30. Down 260. August bean oil at 40.95, 51 cents higher on the day. Livestock in the cattle futures, August contract 91.87 1/2, down 30 cents. Feeders at 113, up 40 cents. And the August lean hogs today settled at $87 even. They were a dime higher, but the October futures were down 67.5 cents at $78.92 1/2. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures September contract, $82.46 a barrel, $1.12 higher for the day. Ethanol at $1.73 9/10, up a penny and 9/10. Natural gas at $4.66 4/10, down 3 7/10. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.19 8/10 a cent, up 4 4/10 of a cent on the afternoon. Gold futures at $1,185.20 an ounce, $1.80 higher, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now just about 27 points lower at 10,648. The U.S. dollar at 80.59 is down 0.35, and the CRB index at 276.63 is down 0.22. The Goldman Sachs at 540.83, up 3.92 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the immediate area looks like for the rest of the day. The National Weather Service says it will be hot and humid. Partly sunny skies, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high in the low 90s. South winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. The heat index will read between 100 and 105 this afternoon. Tonight should be partly cloudy, lows in the low 70s with light west winds. And then tomorrow, hot and humid again. Mostly sunny, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the area. Highs in the low 90s, light west winds at heat index at 100 to 105. Now, Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows tomorrow night around 70, light northeast winds. And then Thursday, mostly sunny skies, highs in the upper 80s, northwest winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Thursday night through Friday night, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-60s and highs in the upper 80s. And Saturday and Sunday, mostly clear skies, highs in the mid-80s, lows in the mid-60s. A more complete look at the weather forecast for the growing areas when we get to the bottom of the hour. And we talk with meteorologist Don Day here on the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On this Tuesday afternoon, we're joined by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. Wayne, as we took a look at the markets yesterday, and there was quite a nice little pop in that marketplace, and farmers actually rewarded the marketplace. Do you think that they should continue to do that? There he goes. Wayne's gone. So I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll give him a call right back and see whether we can find Wayne and why he disappeared here on the Closing Market Report. Let's try that one more time. Wayne, are you with me now?
You betcha.
Oh, I thought so. Okay, so let's talk about what happened in the marketplace today and why it was that farmers rewarded it yesterday and whether they should continue to or not.
Well, I think yesterday was a great opportunity to reward. We went up and hit some resistance points, and they did not follow on through. We're continuing to see, our crop ratings yesterday were down 1%, but basically the big three states improved on their ratings, which says that the corn crop looks like it's going to be somewhat good. The midday forecast today is warmer and drier than the overnight run. There's some high-pressure ridging noted in the 7 to 15-day time frame, and mid-90s across the Midwest with reduced rainfall potential, which is what sort of perked the bean market back up. You know, there are 115 heat index and over 100 degrees down on the Gulf Shore here today. Some of our customers are down there vacationing, saying it's just downright miserable. But, markets here, we took a little time out. You know, Russia, that area continues to see bad weather. They're questioning whether they're going to have enough moisture to replant or to plant wheat for next year and things like that. But all in all, we've got the third largest wheat crop out there, but we think there might be one bounce left in this market, and we want to sell it aggressively.
Yeah, so when that bounce comes, where you think it'll be and where you're going to start your sales?
Well, I think, yesterday's highs, we've got some 420 resting orders in the Deese corn, feeling that 420, 425 mark is achievable, but probably that's going to be, we might get to the party a little bit early on that one, but we want to make sure we get to the party.
All right, and then for beans, what do you think there?
The beans are the hard guess here. We're going to have to watch the weather a little close, but our next sale on the beans is going to be at 10:30. I'm used to saying they're going back into the nines, and that's a dollar off, but we would like to do some more at 10:30.
10 sounds so much better, doesn't it?
10 sounds wonderful from the attitude of where we're putting sales on, yes.
Okay, thanks much. Anything else to add before I let you go?
The one thing to look at weather-wise is we started to see some sunspot activity here in the last couple of days, and that's something that might change the weather around the equator.
Thank you much.
Bye.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. Well, yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture updated the weekly crop progress report. It now shows nationally 93% of this year's corn crop was at the silking stage or beyond by the last week's end. That's 19 percentage points ahead of last year, 7 points ahead of the 5-year rolling average. Silking throughout the Corn Belt was nearly complete ahead of both last year and normal. 31% of the corn crop was at or beyond the dough stage by August the 1st, 18 percentage points ahead of last year, 7 points ahead of the 5-year average. Warm temperatures continue to cause rapid phenological development in Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, and Michigan, where 21% or more of the crop had reached the dough stage during the week. In Iowa, the largest corn-producing state, additional rainfall during the week left many low-lying fields completely saturated, stunting growth and causing yellowing of some fields. Nationwide, 7% of the corn crop was at or beyond the dented stage, 4 percentage points ahead of last year, and slightly ahead of the 5-year average. Overall, 71% of the corn crop reported in good to excellent condition. That's down slightly from last week, but 3 points ahead of this same time last year. Soybeans, warm, mostly sunny weather, promoted rapid development throughout much of the major soybean-producing area last week. By the week's end, the blooming had advanced to 86% complete, 12 points ahead of last year, 3 points ahead of the 5-year average. By the first day of August, pods were set on 53% of the nation's soybean acreage. That's 20 points ahead of last year, 5 points ahead of the 5-year average. And while pod setting was most advanced in the Delta, nearly ideal growing conditions in Indiana had pushed progress to 14 days ahead of the 5-year average. Overall, 66% of the soybean crop reported in good to excellent condition, down slightly from both ratings last week and at this same time last year.
This is Brad Parks, Deputy Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending August 1, 2010. Last week's weather in Iowa once again fit the trend for the 2010 crop season. Scattered rain and storms were accompanied by hot, humid days, causing rapid crop growth on well-draining land. Meanwhile, low-lying fields remained completely saturated with many instances of ponding. The continued rainfall left farmers with less than ideal conditions for field work. Crops are still reported mostly in good condition, even with the above-average precipitation Iowa has received this summer. Corn looks extremely good in areas, while some fields have stunted yellow corn in lowland areas and a few instances of drownout. Overall, the soybeans look good, but some fields are showing visible signs of the consistent rain and excessive moisture. Fortunately, aphid numbers are reported as low, given that many operators have not been able to spray. However, some fields have shown signs of sudden death syndrome in central Iowa. Nearly all the corn acres have tasseled, 94% have silked, and 54% have reached milk stage. All three are still ahead of last year and the 5-year average. Corn reached the dough stage and 12% of the crop, which is ahead of last year, but equal to the 5-year average. Corn condition was virtually unchanged at 3% very poor, 8% poor, 19% fair, 43% good, and 27% excellent. 91% of the soybean crop has bloomed, compared to 89% last year and 90% for the 5-year average. Pods have set on 63% of the soybean acres, 2 days ahead of last year and 1 day ahead of the 5-year average. Soybean condition changed very little, with 3% very poor, 7% poor, 19% fair, 46% good, and 25% excellent. Again, this has been Brad Parks, Deputy Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending August 1st, 2010. Thank you.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office. Precipitation was sporadic throughout the state last week, with rainfall averaging from 38 one-hundredths of an inch in central Illinois to just over an inch in southern Illinois. However, there were other isolated areas receiving much more rainfall where flooding and standing water hindered crop development. Growing degree day units since May 1 ended the week at 2,049. Which was 190 units, or 10%, ahead of the historic average. Statewide corn in the dough stage advanced to 64%, compared to only 15% last year and 37% for the 5-year average. 15% of the corn crop was reported dented, compared with 1% last year and 6% for the 5-year average. Overall, the corn crop was rated in 66% good or excellent condition, up 1 percentage point from last week. The crop reporting district leading the state in corn maturity was the West Southwestern District, where 78% was reported in the dough stage. Soybean blooming progress ended the week at 89% complete, and this compares to 61% last year and 82% for the five-year average. 55% of soybeans are setting pods, compared to 17% a year ago and 45% for the five-year average. Overall, the soybean crop was rated in 64% good or excellent condition, up 1 percentage point from last week. The crop reporting district leading the state in soybean maturity was the Northeastern District, where 66% of the plants were reported setting pods. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service with the crop weather report for the week ending August 1, 2010. Wheat harvest was complete in all areas except for northern Panhandle counties. Soil moisture supplies were pulled lower due to the week's hot, dry conditions with irrigation active. Row crop development was now ahead of last year and near average for most crops. Grasshoppers were a concern in some western counties. Hay harvest was active with the dry conditions. Irrigated and dry land corn conditions both rated 84% good or excellent near year-ago levels. Corn silk was at 95% ahead of last year and the average. Corn in the dough stage was 28% ahead of last year and average. Corn in the dent stage was 2%. Soybeans blooming were 90% complete and soybean setting pods were at 48%. Wheat harvest was 95% complete, near last year's 94, but 3 days behind the 98 average. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for week ending August 1st, 2010. Small grains continued to ripen well ahead of the average pace, but frequent precipitation and wet field conditions slowed harvest progress. As of August 1st, the statewide average temperature was 71.3 degrees, about 1 degree above normal. However, heavy rains fell in the north, and every reporting station across the state recorded some precipitation during the week. This kept fields wet and limited field work in the north and central parts of the state. Development of corn and soybeans continued at the average pace, and condition ratings were mostly good or excellent. However, some reporters noted that consistent surplus moisture caused drowned-out areas in some corn and soybean fields. Corn development was on pace with average, with 30% in the milk stage and 3% in the dough stage. Soybeans were 48% setting pods, 18 points ahead of last year, but on pace with average. Crop conditions generally improved from last week. 50% of corn was rated good and 40% was rated excellent, while 56% of soybeans were rated good and 31% of soybeans were rated excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending August 1. Persistent high temperatures and humidity that have stressed field crops finally gave way to slightly cooler weather associated with scattered showers that arrived at the end of the week. Scattered storms provided some timely relief from the heat, and as a result, the recent high temperatures for July failed to generally reduce the field crop condition ratings for the week. A few reports of disease problems in soybean fields were received, but most of the field crops have passed the vulnerable pollination stage of development. Some of the early planted corn fields have just reached the denting stage. 96% of the planted corn acreage has silk, compared with 73% for last year and 87% for the five-year average. 38% of the planted corn acreage is in the dough stage, compared with 8% for last year and 22% for the five-year average. Corn condition for the week was rated at 63% good to excellent, compared with 66% for last year at this time. 87% of the planted soybean acreage is blooming, compared with 65% last year at this time and 78% for the five-year average. 59% of the soybean acreage is setting pods, compared to 17% for last year and 35% for the five-year average. Soybean condition is rated as 64% in the good to excellent category, compared with 66% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
And I'm Todd Gleason at the Illinois Public Media Studios in Urbana-Champaign on the U of I campus. It is Tuesday afternoon and time to check in on the agricultural energy markets. On the phone line with us from his office at GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois, is Harry Cooney. Good afternoon to you, Harry. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It is a hot one, and I don't know whether that means that people use more or less energy for fuel, that is, as diesel and gasoline. What do you think?
Well, it's your hot tamale out there today, and the markets have been red hot. Kind of interesting, as the temperature goes up, the markets seem to go up. We've had a big surge in the oil futures market here, where crude oil had been stuck in a range from about 70 on the bottom to about 80 on the top for about the last 2 months. Just yesterday, we surged over $80, even closed yesterday over 81. And today now we're closing over 82. Yesterday we had a big move in the stock market, of course. What was it, up a couple hundred or so on the Dow? Today that's not the case. Today the stock market's actually setting back about 25 points. So it's taking a breather, but the energy markets sure did not take a breather today. Gasoline market closed up about 3 cents, and the diesel fuel, or the heating oil market that we get the diesel price from, closed up about 4.5 cents. So those markets were strong as the dollar fell again today. The dollar's been falling quite dramatically, and that seems to be helping the energy markets. And definitely, we got over that big hump at $80 here this week.
Any other fundamental reasons that the marketplace should be going higher? Is there just a matter that the dollar is weaker and it's easier to buy at a higher price?
I think some of the funds, the big money people, starting to get back on the long side of the market. I think as of this last Friday's report, they give us a report every Friday afternoon, shows where the funds are at, the big money players. They were net long only about, and I say only, about 40,000 contracts of crude oil. And to put it in some perspective, they can get all the way up to 130,000 or 140,000 contracts before they really consider the market to be overbought. So at 40,000 contracts, there's a lot of room for those guys to come in and do some buying. Also, there's some seasonal studies, some 10 and 15 year seasonal studies that suggest heating oil prices go up from now into fall. So that's kind of out there. And the other thing is, we're starting to see some demand coming back. Gasoline demand only 4% below the peak, the highest peak from back in 2007. Now, diesel fuel demand is still more than 10% below that peak, but gasoline demand's been running real strong. A lot of people taking vacations this summer, and that's definitely seen in that demand number. A lot of refineries back chugging out quite a bit of fuel. We're back to over 90%, I think, now in the latest number of the operating rates by the refineries here in the U.S., and that's about the highest number we've seen in a couple of years. So it looks like there's some demand coming back in the market. So that's, when you mention a fundamental item, that's one of the items out there. Not everything's good yet, but things are heading in a better direction.
And what are you thinking the producers should be doing at this point about locking in anything for the fall? Should they have done that already and not worry about it?
Well, obviously the lowest levels seem to be behind. The first thing they should be doing, though, is getting their tanks filled up in here. Now, that's their cheapest price off the spot market. The spot market's the cheapest. So just make sure to at least have your inventory filled up. And then if they want to take a look at doing some contracting, okay. But the first line should be to get those inventories filled up.
Thanks much, Harry.
Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney is with GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Watermelon Day. It's also St. Lydia's Day, patron of clothes dryers. On this day in agricultural history in 1492, Christopher Columbus sailed from Spain on his first voyage to what he thought were the Indies. In 1801, Sir Joseph Paxton was born. Paxton was an English landscape gardener and a hothouse designer. He was the architect of the Crystal Palace at the Great Exhibition of 1851 in London. In 1806, Michael Addison was born. Addison was a French botanist who developed a system of plant classification based on physical characteristics. In 1811, Elisha Graves Otis was born. He invented the first safe elevator and opened the door to rooftop restaurants. His elevator featured an automatic safety brake, a spring-loaded bar that caught on the rails if the elevator cable broke. In 1914, the first ships passed through the Panama Canal. And in 1921, John McCready became the first person to crop dust from an airplane. He did it over a farm near Troy, Ohio, to kill an infestation of caterpillars. By the way, he also was a co-pilot on the first nonstop U.S. transcontinental flight in May of 1923. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon dawn day of day weather. Out of Cheyenne, Wyoming is with us now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for Illinois, Indiana, the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start here in the good old USA. I think what we've got coming as we get a little bit deeper into August is basically more of the same that we've been looking at. I don't see anything extraordinary coming. We're going to continue with some warm temperatures. I think looking at good crop development type conditions with temperatures maybe a little bit above normal, so we might have a few hot days, but I don't see any record-breaking heat. And as we've seen lately, off and on, precipitation is going to be moving on through as thunderstorm activity will occasionally be moving across the Midwest and Corn Belt.
It sounds familiar. Warm and wet. That's what happened in June and July. Do you think it can be sustained all the way through the month of August?
I certainly, at least through the middle of this month, I don't see any changes, and probably at least through the third week of August. So things are trending very close to, well, normals for this time of year. I think one thing we'll need to watch is if we get what's called training, where we might have a few areas that are always underneath thunderstorms, where a wave will come through, and that area of rain could have hit similar areas on a more frequent basis that could cause a few wet spots to develop. But I think right now that's our only concern.
And where would you suggest those might happen? It seems Iowa's been awfully wet.
I would say that Iowa is in that area. We've got a very large and strong area of high pressure that's over Oklahoma and Texas. And it's always the edges of the high pressure where these systems rotate through and cause the heavier rain. Eastern Nebraska, Iowa, maybe northwest Illinois, those areas will likely be the most wet.
Okay, turn your attention to the globe. Probably better check in on two things, the Chinese corn and bean crop, and then touch on Ukraine and Russia and the wheat crop.
Well, as we go over to China, they've had a pattern really not unlike what we've had here. They're going to be maybe a little warmer and a little drier than they have been, but I certainly see opportunities for precipitation in China. Although not as moist as it's been, and a little bit hotter as well. Over in Europe, over into Russia, some areas, especially Russia, have been experiencing some pretty extreme heat, and that is going to continue. Russia is, again, going to be looking at hot weather. This is going to affect some of the eastern portions of the Ukraine, the western Ukraine, eastern Europe, not quite as hot. Western Europe, actually, a little bit below normal, but more the same for Russia.
Any other place that we ought to look in on before I let you go for the afternoon?
I think that'll do it. The rest of the world kind of is cruising along with a fairly normal summer so far.
All right. Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Stay with us if you can for the farming world. If not, you can always hear it online as part of the Closing Mark Report at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdiffer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Farming World news and information from the University of Illinois and the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, the flash crash that happened with the Dow Jones Industrial Average earlier in the year scared the world. Today we're going to talk a bit about it and high-speed trading with Benjamin Van Vliet. He's a lecturer at the Illinois Institute of Technology Stewart School of Business. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Van Vliet. We do appreciate you taking the time. First, why don't you outline what a flash crash is and what happened on that fateful day to the Dow Jones Industrial Average?
Well, first of all, the term flash crash was something that the media assigned. I think somewhat in haste, in a way to sort of maybe sensationalize the fact that somehow automated trading systems caused this crash. And while it did happen very quickly, in retrospect, the association with automated trading systems turns out to be incorrect. So that's how it got the name. It harks back to what was called flash trading, which was a scandal about a year or so ago that occurred with automated trading systems. So I think in some ways the term was invented to try and associate this crash with the sort of seedy business of flash trading, which was a story that was popular in the media about a year or so ago. So
then tell me how this crash occurred and why.
Well, you know, as best we can figure, a large institutional client came into the market and attempted to sell large amounts of stock and futures in order to rehedge their very large position. And so when this very large order came into the market, you'll probably recall that at that time, the market was already jittery because of the things happening in Europe and the Greek problems in their economy. And so the market was already jittery. And when this large order came in, it triggered a lot of stop orders that were already in the market. And for a couple of minutes there, all of the volume that came into the market was sell orders, and the buyers backed away. And so for a brief moment, we had no buyers and all sellers, and that's when you get a crash.
Can you tell me more about the order? What do we know about the original order that was put in? Was it larger than expected? Was it an accident or a mistake in the way of an extra zero or more than one zero?
As best we can tell, there was no mistake. It was just a very large institution, and I'm not quite sure which one. I'm not sure if anybody is, but that sort of started a cascading of selling. So when other market participants are trying to protect their long positions, they might do that with sell stop orders, so that if your asset declines in price, it'll automatically get sold. So when a large order came into the market, which was done, you know, with intent to reposition this large institution and their risk exposure, it triggered lots of other automatic sell orders that then sort of overwhelmed the market. And in some ways, then the fact that the New York Stock Exchange actually suspended trading briefly actually exacerbated the problem, because all of this volume then sort of panics and immediately looks for other venues to execute. And for a while, there was no buy volume. And all the volume was looking for sort of selling at an instant. But that kind of market scenario is not caused by automated trading. It has nothing to do with automated trading. It's simply a scenario similar to what happened in 1987, that for whatever reason, when everybody wants to sell at the same time, people who might otherwise be interested in buying might step back, take a deep breath, and say, I'm not sure what's going on here. I don't feel like buying now when everyone else in the world wants to sell. And so you get sort of a vacuum, and the price can drop precipitously. To me, what's interesting is how fast things came back. Within a couple of minutes, the entire market turned around, and we were basically back to where we were. I think the market was down about 300 points before the flash crash happened, and then within a couple of minutes of it happening, we were right back to being down 300 points. So, you know, sort of cooler heads prevailed, and the market corrected itself very quickly. And just to continue the conversation, I think there's at least as much evidence to support the argument that automated trading is what sort of saved the trading day as there is evidence to say that automated trading somehow contributed to the flash crash. And I think that there's been a significant decline in the media coverage of automated trading since we sort of figured out what happened. And I think part of that is because we realized that automated trading systems actually helped alleviate the situation rather than exacerbating the problem.
How do you think they did that?
Well, I think for two reasons. The first one is that people have long recognized that human emotions are part of the problem in trading, that our being human gets in the way of rational decision making. Fear and greed prevent us from making good trades. And to be sure, if you're a professional trader, or you trade intraday, you understand that downside discipline and all these things are extremely important. But automated trading systems don't have to worry about emotions. They're sort of much more rational, purely rational, and able to calculate values and theoretical values and future probabilities of payoffs much more rationally than humans are. So when everyone else is running for the door in a panic sense, the computers are much more capable of sort of looking at the situation rationally and making rational trading decisions. And so in this case, I think that that the automated trading systems saw the situation for what it was, which was an irrational move to the downside and an excellent opportunity to buy. And that's why we saw the market come back so quickly. I think we shouldn't be so much concerned about how fast it dropped, but we should be happy with how fast it rallied back. And I think that's due to automated trading systems. The second thing is that most of these algorithmic trading systems bet against the occurrence of extreme volatility. In other words, when things start to go haywire and the market is and everyone is selling, in financial markets we tend to talk about mean reversion, that when things get sort of too far away from what the real price is, we expect them to come back to the real price. And so most automated trading systems sort of bet on mean reversion. So when everyone else is selling and pushing the market too far down, it's the automated trading systems that are calculating the probability of mean reversion and betting against sort of extreme moves. So in that respect, you know, in both those respects, I think there's, like I say, I think there's a better argument to be made for the fact that automated trading systems saved the day rather than made the problem worse or even caused the problem.
When we see the floor, the trading floor, they're always filled with people. Is there open outcry still taking place?
Oh, sure.
On those trading floors?
Sure, but the lion's share of the volume is all done electronically now, both here and in other parts, both in Chicago. in New York and other parts of the world. So while you do still see some traders in their funny colored coats walking around, there's probably a tenth of those people as there were 15 years ago. So some of the contracts do trade, and particularly in the case of options, futures options, most of that business is still done in the pits, just sort of because of the nature and the volume of trading and the sort of specialized trades that are done in that sector of the markets. But most of the futures trading, certainly the lion's share of the number of trades, a vast majority of the number of trades, maybe sometimes some of the larger orders go to the floor. But most trades are done electronically now.
Yeah, most of the futures for commodity traders done electronically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to be like, clear, we understand that here, that yeah. that's the case, and we understand that and how quickly that moved from open outcry to electronic trading in the last 3 years, and there was a 6 month period where it really moved fairly quickly. The reason I ask about the open outcry in New York was I'd like you to compare, and you started to just a bit, the fall, this fall, to the previous big fall, when we lost about 500 points, I think. And what the difference between those two might be because of electronic trading or automated trading and the open outcry trading that was taking place then.
Yeah, well, you know, back then when the market fell 500 points, but of course that was a 25% move or thereabouts, I think, back in 1987. And back then all the trading was done in the pits and you know, literally when that kind of market action happens, most of the traders in the pit just walked out of the pit and left. And rather than jump into a situation that might be potentially ruinous for them personally, they just walked. So you have the very physical scene of people walking away from trading. But in the flash crash, you have a similar kind of thing. But because most of the markets are done over electronic networks, it's sort of not a physical walking away, but an electronic walking away. But certainly algorithmic trading didn't create this scenario of people walking away from markets they think are too risky and don't want to trade in. But because the lion's share of the trading is now generated actually by automated systems, you saw them jump back in very, very quickly, whereas, you know, in 1987, it took a couple of days. Well, we came back very quickly the day after the crash in 1987. You know, it still took us several months before we sort of climbed our way back to where we had been before, whereas this year, you know, we climbed all the way back in a matter of minutes. So in that respect, markets behaved very well. And I might add that you see a lot of discussion about circuit breakers in markets, and I think that's just only exacerbates the problem. The best thing for markets to do to work themselves out is to keep trading, and having circuit breakers or some external force interrupt trading or disrupt trading in order to have cooler heads prevail in general, I think only is going to exacerbate the problem. I mean, here we had the market go down 1,000 points and bounce right back up within a day, and while the number of points, 1,000 points, makes a big splash in the newspaper, it was only a 10% move to the downside, which relative to 1987 wasn't that, even though it was double the number of points, it was less than half the percentage amount of the crash of 1987.
We're talking with Ben Van Bleet this afternoon. He's at the Illinois Institute of Technology Stewart School of Business about the Dow Jones Industrial Average crash that happened earlier this year. We'll talk more about that in a moment here on The Farming World.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, the feels like temperature outside this afternoon here in Urbana-Champaign is now 92 degrees. That's actually what the temperature is. The feels like, or the heat index, has climbed dangerously high at this point to 116 degrees. Please do take care to stay inside if you need to be outside. Have plenty of water on hand and find shade if you can. Make sure the same is possible for your animals. Be sure to take care. Here's what the weather forecast says it will be like tonight. Partly cloudy skies, lows in the low 70s, light west winds this evening. Wednesday, hot and humid again. Mostly sunny, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the low 90s, light west winds. Heat index again will rise tomorrow afternoon to 100, 105, maybe higher. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Lows will range from 70 in around 70, that is, and light northeast winds. Thursday night, mostly sunny skies, highs in the upper 80s, north winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. And then Thursday night through Friday night, partly cloudy skies, lows in the mid-60s, highs in the upper 80s. Saturday and Saturday night, mostly clear, highs in the mid-80s, lows in the mid-60s. We'll have more details on the weather forecast throughout the afternoon. You are listening to Illinois Public Media and the Farming World. Stay with us for the second half of our program. This is the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we're talking with Ben Van Bleet. He's a lecturer at the Illinois Institute of Technology's Stewart School of Business. We had just taken up, Mr. Van Bleet, the idea that shutting down trade might not be a good thing when you have a violent crash, even a 10% crash, in the Dow Jones Industrial Average in New York. Why is that the case? Is it because automated trading, as you suggested, doesn't have feelings in particular like humans might, and so it's not as scared to get back in? And frankly, it works so quickly that you don't have a chance as a human to tell it not to get back in?
Yeah, you know, the most recent research that we have is that 70% of the trading volume in the United States is driven by automated systems. 70%. So when a lawmaker stands up and says, you know, we need to have circuit breakers so that we can have a cooling off period and people can get a level head, it's like, well, you know, who needs to get a level head? It's all driven by computers, you know. So to say we need circuit breakers so that, you know, human emotions can sort of, you know, cooler heads can prevail, or kind of thing. It's like, well, none of this stuff is driven by emotional humans anymore anyway. So, you know, to me, the best thing to do is to keep trading and let the market work it out for itself. And sort of the quicker you let that happen, the better it's going to be for everybody in the long run. If you halt trading, you're going to force all sorts of margin calls, and it isn't going to prevent the change in perceptions and the change in values in any way. And you're better off letting the market work it out. And, you know, things happen so fast now, you know, it's highly likely that things may get worked out within a couple of minutes or a couple of hours rather than a couple of days or a couple of weeks.
So if it's all based on mathematics, does it really do a good job of setting the market? I mean, it would seem that it might just be a self-fulfilling prophecy on Fibonacci numbers and all sorts of mathematics that the automated systems would be looking at.
Well, yeah, there's all kinds of different strategies, and not everyone is looking for millisecond style trading. I mean, there are certain kind of trading where technology lends itself, for example, in sort of, you know, instantaneous arbitrage situations, where the fastest person to trade is the one that gets the profit. Those kinds of strategies lend themselves very well to instantaneous execution that's only available through automation. There's many, many other strategies that automated trading systems can look at that involve hundreds of different instruments. So you may be trading the futures contract on the S&P and at the same time trading the 500 stocks on the New York Stock Exchange that comprise that index. And so while it seems to someone if I'm buying a futures contract, I'm buying because I think the price is going to go up. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's the person who's or the machine that's selling to me is somehow manipulating the market and taking advantage of me. It's highly likely that the machine is playing an entirely different game, and the reason they're selling to you isn't necessarily because they think that the price is going to go down. It's because they have some other arbitrage opportunity that they're trying to take advantage of. So there's all kinds of different strategies, thousands of different kinds of strategies that these machines can implement. However, you have to realize that if you buy stock in IBM today, and IBM, the prospects for IBM's business goes up, and we expect their earnings to increase, and they have a good year and report good earnings, the stock is going to go up for fundamental reasons, not because of any automated or mathematical reasons. So if you're buying stocks and you're buying for the long term, automated trading in the meantime isn't going to make any difference. The price is still going to go up if the company does well.
So if you're a long-term trader, it's fine. But trying to beat the automated system on your own as a day trader would be kind of tough to do.
Well, you know, short-term day trading has always been difficult.
Well, it's always been difficult, but it's always been handled. I mean, this is what we call the liquidity in the market, and you're telling me that the liquidity in the market's been replaced by automation.
For the most part, that's true. Most of the short-term trading.
And is that okay? I'm simply asking the question: is that okay?
Sure, because it narrows the spreads for all of us. So you may recall back in the 1990s when you wanted to buy stock, you could buy stock in, I was a stockbroker here in Chicago, and I used to sell Teleb stock, which was a great stock in the 90s, and the stock used to have a 50-cent spread between the bid and the ask at times. And now probably the spread on Teleb's is, certainly under 5 cents. But the liquidity providers have to be allowed to make money somehow, and otherwise they're not going to provide liquidity. It used to be that liquidity providers made money by artificially sort of colluding to keep the spreads wide. But when the government made that, took them to task for that, and spreads were forced to close, they made up for it through automation and increased volume.
We're out of time. One very short answer to this question. Is there any reason that trade should be halted?
Absolutely not. I'm 100% against halting of trading. Now, that having been said, none of us can forecast or see what situations in the future.
Ben Van Vliet is a lecturer at the Illinois Institute of Technology, Stewart School of Business. Joined us here on The Farming World. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon.